Arguments 19-1483, Polaris versus Hirschfeld. Mr. Phillips, we anticipate that we've covered the process threshold issues in the earlier case, so I assume you plan to start on the merits here.
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor. Unless Your Honors have additional questions about the termination issue, which I'd be happy to answer. Are Your Honors ready?
Yes.
Okay. So the claim interpretation in this issue is also concerning a dependent claim. And the board erred interpreting language in claims 2 and 15 requiring, quote, a resource tag buffer arranged to store two things, which we can call A and B. That language means that there is a single buffer that stores both A and B.
I'm a little confused. Maybe I'm misunderstanding what's at issue in this case, but your argument seems to be principally that buffer is singular, and you focus on that by arguing that there's one claim buffer rather than many. But it seemed to me, based on the board's decision, that that argument is beside the point, because wasn't it the board's reasoning that there is more, not that there's no, more than one buffer, but rather that one buffer can exist at multiple disparate locations?
That is part of what the board said, Your Honor. And
your expert confirmed kind of or gave the board something to rely on when he said that a buffer need not be in one physical location. It can exist in disparate locations, correct?
Dr. Shabilsky did say that, but the board latched on to only part of what he said and ignored the entirety of his testimony on this point. Dr. Shabilsky explained that in order for a structure to be considered a single buffer by one of ordinary skill in the art, it must be a unified structure, either logically or physically. And he explained that it need not be physically unified. In fact, that is extremely rare in the computer arts. The memory may be distributed, and some portion of the buffer is here in this memory and some portion is over there. But at a higher level of abstraction, which is very common in the computer arts, these memory locations are treated like a single buffer. There's a logical unity to it.
Didn't he say that the type of information they're storing, the buffer would store the same type of information, albeit at different physical locations, and then it would be a buffer?
Yes.
And then the board said that the current state and the requested state are the same type of information as a factual matter.
They are the same type of information. That's
and
why
so
there's...
they said because of the same type of information, the buffer is a single buffer, whether, you know, because it's storing current state in some location and requested state in another location, so it's a buffer. Under the understanding of buffer meaning that it only has to be logically connected.
And that is a correct reading of the 505 patent. That is correct.
But that's what I thought the board held in dispute. I think it's a substantial evidence question at that point about whether the prior art teaches a buffer that has both the current state and the requested state, a resource tag buffer that has both of those tags.
The prior art, and we're talking specifically about the Chevelle reference as well as the Hughes reference.
Can I interrupt you just for a second? If we were to affirm on Chevelle, we don't have to reach Hughes, right?
Or vice versa, yes.
Okay,
so back to your question. I believe this is a claim construction question. Where the board went wrong is looking at these references where there are admittedly two different logical structures that store current state information and requested state information and considered that to be one logically unified buffer.
You've already agreed that current state information and requested state information are the same type of information, right?
In the 505 patent, they are. In the references, though, they are not. In Chevelle, for example, there is There's processing that needs to be done to enable a comparison between the two, and the same is true in Hughes. And that's why...
Is that a claim construction question or a question of fact?
Well, at that point, that's a question of interpreting the references.
So it's a question of fact?
At that point.
That we would review for substantial evidence, right? At that point.
Yes.
Okay.
But again, I think the board went off the rails here and got it wrong when they assumed or determined that as a matter of claim construction, a buffer could be just anything, any structure that stores the same type of information. There's more to it than that. It has to be logically unified, and logical unity requires more than just storing the same type of information. I mean, you can store the same type of information in two different buffers. That is a possibility. That is not the way that the 505 patent describes the invention. But that's the error that the board made, assuming that, you know, structure aside, if it stores the same type of information anywhere, anyhow, it's a single buffer. And that is not what Dr. Shabilsky said. That is not what the 505 patent describes. And that is an incorrect claim construction.
So what is the correct claim construction?
Well, as Dr. Shabilsky said, it is a structure, I think he said a small to medium-sized structure that stores information. And in order to be a single buffer, it has to be either logically unified or physically unified. And logical
unity. My understanding of your blue brief was it all had to be in the same structure, same physical structure. Is that a misunderstanding of your blue brief? I'm actually trying to scan through your blue brief and try to figure out what is the articulation you're pushing for as the right claim construction. I'm having problems finding it.
Yeah,
that be in the blue brief?
Sure. And while I find that, it is not just physically unified. It could be logically unified. But perhaps what is confusing here is that, you know, the types of block diagrams we have with these types of inventions is always at a logical level, right? The physical implementation of how things are stored in memory abstracted away.
I know that's your gray brief argument. I was having trouble finding that in your blue brief.
Okay, well, let me spot that for you. But I believe that starts at page 40. And continues on the next several pages.
Do you have a sentence, or maybe two sentences, that just tell me what you wanted the claim construction to be that the board did not adopt?
Maybe the most helpful thing I can point you to is appendix page 1222 through 1223, paragraph 38 of Dr. Shabilsky's declaration.
But what about in your blue brief? Where in your blue brief will we see what claim construction you asked the board to adopt?
Page 29, Your Honor. This is where we cite to Dr. Shabilsky's testimony. And the question is not just what is a buffer, but what is the claim phrase at issue? A resource tag buffer arranged to store A and B.
So you said several times that your expert said that logical unity involves storing one or more values of the same type, but that's not enough. There needs to be more. So I'm still having a hard time understanding what additionally is required.
What additionally is required is that at the logical level, which is abstracted up from the physical level, it is, I know this sounds circular, but it's really an intuitive concept that it's logically one structure. That
so it's not enough that the data be of the same type?
It necessarily has to be.
There has to be some sort of, it feels a little nebulous to be honest with you, some sort of requirement that it's, what did you say? Logically
unified.
What does that mean?
I think the easiest way to envision this in this type of technology is when you're looking at a typical block diagram, which is always at a logical level. If it's shown as one block, it is logically unified. If it's shown as two different blocks, they are logically distinct. It's as simple as that.
It's not in his testimony, nor is it in your specification.
Nor is it in your blue brief. It's in your gray brief.
Responding to the office's arguments, yes. But if you look at this patent, the 505 patent, every time it refers to the resource tag buffer, there is one block. It's numbered 114 in all the drawings. It's a single entity.
So I should never read a block in a patent to mean that maybe there's blocks within that block?
There may be blocks within that block, but it's still a block at some level that is unified at some
point. So it really goes to how the person who's drawing the drawings in the patent draws them.
And the references, when they mean to a signal that something is the same structure, logically, it's drawn as one block. If not, it's drawn as two different blocks. Yes. It's really not any more difficult than that. Unless there are further questions, I'll yield the rest of my time.
Okay, well, we'll reserve that time for rebuttal if you need it. Let's hear from you.
Good morning. Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I understand that the termination issue wasn't addressed in the opening, so it's not within the scope of my reply here, but I am happy to address any lingering
Just
questions.
A quick question, procedurally. How many cases are there that you're aware of that are like this, that are in this kind of post-Supreme Court Arthrex world where a final written decision had been vacated by us but then got brought back to life by the Supreme Court Arthrex decision, and then somebody wants to they wanted to terminate the proceeding, and then the board refused to terminate the proceeding. I'm just trying to figure out, is this situation a one-off, a one-timer, or are there actually a whole basket of cases that have this same issue, the same dispute between the PTO and a patent owner?
So out of the approximately 100 cases that got remanded post this court's 2019 Arthrex decision, I'm aware of the four cases that Polaris' counsel has pointed out where a joint motion to terminate was filed and it was granted. And then there's the four cases, the two Polaris and then the Aristocrat and the Apotex cases, where a joint motion to terminate was filed and not granted. And the difference between those is the PTO's involvement and intervention on the merits of the appeal before the 2019 Arthrex decision. So we're really talking about just four cases on one side, four cases on the other.
So is your answer to Judge Chen, this is it?
This should be it, because as Polaris' counsel mentioned, the Apotex case has gone through this court. I believe there's the Aristocrat case. They have clearly the option to raise that in their opening brief, but my understanding is that has not been filed yet. So if anything, there should be one case left. And I think that the weight of the side shows you that this case is really more like all the other 90 plus cases where the final written decision in the proceedings was not terminated. The real outlier is kind of the four cases where the board did terminate the final written decision on remand. So that's kind of the distinction there. But yes, this is a very kind of unique minor issue.
Thanks.
If I could make one clarification with respect to the final resolution, and there was some discussion about the finality, there is the ministerial act of terminating the petitioner, as Judge Stoll mentioned, was required under 317. So that is still kind of the outstanding action ministerially that the Patent Office needs to take. But substantively, the board did address the pending motion.
Why haven't they done that yet?
I think it's just a matter of jurisdiction. So once cert was granted, it passed the Supreme Court. Then it was request for director review. The director did not use the discretion. It was Mr. Hirschfeld did not use his discretion. It came back to this court. So as we mentioned in our brief, we're happy to do that action when it comes back.
I'll just mention to Mr. Phillips that since we've been talking about matters that he didn't raise initially, his rebuttal time will give him sufficient time to respond to the extent he wishes to.
Thank you, Your Honor. Turning to the merits of the argument, the board properly construed the term resource tag buffer to be defined by the resource tags it stored without any requirement for additional physical or logical unity. And this construction is consistent with both the intrinsic and extrinsic record. I think the kind of physical unity requirement is now off the table. That's been conceded. There's no requirement for a physical continuity between the buffers. So we're kind of left with this argument that a single buffer must be one that's logically united. But the board already really found a logical connection in that it's defined by the resource tags it's stored. There's simply no support claim construction-wise for Polaris's assertion of some additional logical unity. And in fact, as this court has recognized, it's really hard to define what exactly it is requiring. With respect, as Your Honor...
So anywhere that a resource tag is stored, wherever that may be, that's going to be considered a portion of the overall resource tag buffer? And that's it? That's all we have to think about?
So within the broad language of Claim 2, it has to also be within a buffer, which is temporary storage, so not permanent storage. It also has to be within the universal controller, so it can't be in some other portion. And it also has to be, I believe, coupled to what they call, I can get the exact claim language, but it has to be coupled to another portion. And so there are some additional limitations, but the claim language, yes, Your Honor, is very broad in that it defines resource tag buffer as something that just stores resource tags. And that's consistent with, I think, Polaris's reply brief at pages...
There isn't anything in the intrinsic evidence that really spells that out for me. I mean, the strongest thing, it seems to be Polaris's expert's statement in his declaration about what does logical unity mean, about storing values of the same type.
So with respect to the intrinsic evidence, I think the strongest argument would be the fact that the spec only ever refers to a resource tag buffer by what it stores. Indeed, figure 1B and 1D, that box does not labeled resource tag buffer, it's labeled resource tags. It's defining that buffer by what it stores. And so that is the intrinsic evidence supporting that that is the only limiting definition of buffer, in addition to the plain and ordinary meaning that it has to be temporary storage. Now, the board, in its obvious analysis, did an analysis both under its construction and Polaris's construction. There is no dispute that if this court agrees with the board's construction, the claims are obvious. But the board went further and said, even if there's some requirement for some additional logical unity, the claims meet that, and that's supported by the prior art meets that, and that's supported by substantial evidence, which is the prior art itself and its discussion of the fact that it compares in both the Chevelle and the Hughes references. It talks about the fact that it compares these resource tags in, for example, Hughes has a logic and compare machine where it compares those. And Dr. Tredenick said, because the prior art says that it's comparing these resource tags from two different physical locations, that means those locations are logically united so as to be one buffer. Dr. Przybylski's response, or he actually didn't submit a declaration in response to that. So we just have Dr. Przybylski's testimony that neither Hughes or Chevelle really show any logical unity. And that's pretty much it. There's no citation. There's no addressing the logic and compare machine. He just says they're probably not the same format of data. And so the board was correct in relying on the actual statements of the references and Dr. Tredenick's analysis of those as substantial evidence to support its determination versus Dr. Przybylski's more conclusionary expert testimony that there's no logical unity without any support. If I could just briefly address the kind of boxes theory, as this court has recognized, that wasn't in Dr. Przybylski's testimony. It also wasn't in the brief. But also I think it's important to note that it actually contradicts Dr. Przybylski's testimony. At Appendix 1087, which is his deposition testimony, he was asked whether if you had a figure that showed multiple boxes of, I think they're called page registers, in a row, and they each store a resource tag, would those multiple boxes be considered one resource tag buffer? And he said yes. And he was asked, how would you know when multiple boxes would be or would not be a resource tag buffer? And he said, by what they store and how they're used. And that is entirely consistent with the board's construction and also consistent with how they interpreted the prior art.
You said 1087?
Yes, that's Appendix 1087, which is Dr. Przybylski's deposition testimony. And Dr. Trudetnik also addressed kind of this multiple box theory at Appendix 1147, if Your Honor needs some more information on that. Unless Your Honors have further questions, I'm more than happy to cede the rest of my time.
I think they're looking at the evidence for a second to see if they have. Any further questions?
Thank you, Your Honors.
I have nothing further unless Your Honors have other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We thank both sides and the case is submitted.